Welcome back, everybody. It's Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA, your source for mayoral debate 2016, coming up on March the 10th. We are the voice of the community. We're joined now by Brian Sears, government reporter for The Daily Record, and Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television. As we look at what's happening in Annapolis, Brian, Charles, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Good morning, Mark.
And remind you all to give us a holler, 410-319-8888, with your thoughts. Write to us here by email to talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So let me begin with what I thought was emblematic of the political battle in Maryland, but also of the war in the state legislature, which had to do with Governor Larry Hogan's first announcement that Morgan State University, Coppin State University, other universities would not get the funding so he could build a new city jail. And then he backpedaled and left. And then, of course, there was this back and forth he had on WBAL with C4, where he likened delegates and senators to kids on a school break. And more, and you can – so this is an interesting political phenomenon. It's very different than with Ehrlich, I think. Charles, let me let you go first.
This has been the tit-for-tat, if you will. The governor has the right to shape the agenda down here, but the legislature does have that option to, if you will, scrutinize it, make suggestions as to what they think the pulse of the state is. I said when this was first introduced in the budget hearings that the optics were bad, just purely bad, because you don't want folk to think that we're going to fund jails and not fund education. The governor can set the priorities. And, you know, this last week with the culmination of everyone, you know, saying, look, why are you doing this to us? But guess what? You still got to work with these guys.
So, but Brian, what was the subtext of the backpedaling on the city jail money versus colleges? What do you think the politics of that were? What happened?
Well, look, I mean, the first of all, the term backpedaling, I'll leave that. That's something I'll let you characterize. I mean, the issue is a little more complicated, Mark, because
right.
Some of these legislators, you know, they applauded the tearing down of this decrepit jail that I think everybody agreed had to go. But they also wanted to have a conversation about speeding up the timeline in which a newer facility would be built. The governor initially, you know, acquiesced to those wishes. I think they wanted the $700 million or, you know, for a facility. I think he decided to do one for $450. The numbers are give and take here. But then they came out on Thursday, last Thursday, at the same time that the governor was on another radio station, and, you know, and essentially said that the governor, you know, Kurt Anderson, Delegate Kurt Anderson, made the comment that the governor was making decisions that constituted an assault on black communities. I specifically asked if they thought that the governor was making decisions that were racially motivated, and the response overwhelmingly was absolutely. And so the governor at that point, you know, by the end of the day, basically, and I should point out, at the same time they're having this press conference, the governor is on another radio station saying, look, I'd rather not have anything to do with the jail, and if people are upset about it and they don't want it and that's the decision, then we'll find something else to do with the money and we'll talk about some higher education projects. So, you know, at this point, like ships that are passing the night. And then Hogan turns, but they've made this decision, and he sends a letter to legislative leaders and say, fine, we're not going to pay for the jail. You guys need to tell me which of these projects you would like me to start prioritizing.
But from what I understood and things I've been reading, people I was talking to, that the initial thing Governor Hogan said was, we can build the jail, we won't build these things for universities. And I'm not sure who you're referring to when you said legislators were pushing that idea. Who pushed that idea?
Well, the governor said that, you know, that lawmakers from Baltimore City specifically wanted to speed up the timeline on which this would be replaced, and so he was acquiescing to their wishes.
I think it was from my conversations here in Baltimore, it seemed things were a little more complex than that. That's why what I'm feeling here and seeing, it seems to me, is that the next gubernatorial election is being held now in some levels.
I think on a lot of levels, there is the feeling down here, especially among Democrats, that that the campaigning hasn't stopped. I mean, that is a refrain that we've heard over and over again.
And maybe in some ways, Charles, it's not just Democrats. I mean, this could be an argument going off into the future here that the governor can make is why we need to elect more Republicans, because we have to get things done.
And that's part of the problem, is the numbers game. He doesn't have the numbers to push his agenda forward. So he's almost at the mercy of the leadership, the Democratic leadership in the legislative body. You know, when we got back here, the legislature overrode six of his vetoes.
Right.
And he was, let me say, ticked, and you can use that other word if you want, specifically about the Felons Voting Rights Act. And remember that after that vote, you know, his group, Change Maryland, put out, I guess what can best be described as a hit piece on legislators who voted against him. And he, and I know Brian was able to record the governor at Chick Roots when he said, they're going to have to pay for this. And, you know, that's pure politics. And you know,
specifically what the governor said during lunch at Chick Roots was that he believed that a number of Democratic legislators, his words, would not survive that veto override vote. Mm-hmm. And he did say that there was a case to be made to voters that they needed to elect more Republicans. And I think specifically he might be talking about electing a number in the Senate that would give him closer to a veto-proof majority, give him enough to prevent a veto. I think, you know, that in that case, I mean, that's reminiscent of Ehrlich's 5 and 15 plan, where he predicted before his first reelection attempt that he was going to try and pick up 5 seats in the Senate, 15 in the House. Governor Hogan is not walking around with a black binder allegedly full of these 5 and 15 names, but the comments are reminiscent.
But and I think in some ways it seems to me, Charles, in covering Governor Hogan and Governor O'Malley pretty intensely as well, the tenor here, for all the jocularity that takes place, despite what the polls are saying about popularity, the tenor here is much more acrimonious and much more tense, it seems to me, than it has been in the past, specifically between Governor Ehrlich and the mostly Democratic legislature.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, but because what we get is, you know, there's very little confrontation, is what I call...
It may not be overt, but it certainly is there.
Right, it's there, but it's more like, I'm going to send a press release out because I don't like what you said about me. And we get a lot of that. A lot of it comes from, and Brian and I have both been recipients of Doug Neer, the communications director's press releases following a vote that they didn't like. Sometimes they can get, it'll get nasty, but they get like, this is the point we're trying to make. And part of that, I think, is this new kind of, call it the PR modus of operandi. In other words, either get out in front or tell the media what your message is. And let's not answer anything other than what our message is.
Brian, what do you think about that?
I think there's a couple of things here. We're in an era of divided government, and Hogan's popularity is disconcerting to some Democrats. And I should point out that, you know, there are some differences between job approval and personal likability, and there's some numbers
right.
You can tease out of the recent Goucher poll that suggests that, you know, while he is, you know, 63% of those that they surveyed say that they approve of the job that he's doing, there's a smaller number, just 53 or 54%, that say that they like him personally. But, you know, his numbers are strong among on both sides are strong among Democrats. And I do think that that's disconcerting. He is very good at social media in a way that we've not seen previous governors, mostly because that has not been a tool that's been available. But his staff is very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
They are very good at getting their message out and communicating directly to people. And you can tell that that social media game is something that legislative leaders here in Annapolis pay a great deal of attention to, and at times it irritates them.
So let me ask this question. In terms of the governor's agenda and his tax reductions and more, where do you think, Charles and Brian, what's going to happen here?
Well, a lot of the legislation that we've gotten is going through the meat grinder. The governor's not going to get everything that he wants, but he'll get some of it. I think when it comes to the budget, which is kind of the main document that everybody points to, and I think Brian would agree with me, the earned income tax credit, the speed up of that, is probably one of those things that's going to go through. Because I've not heard anybody saying that's a bad idea. So you get that. I think the legislature, at least the Democrats in the legislature, want to make the point that they do control the process. And that means that the government's not going to get everything. So
yeah, and I think one of those things, Charles, that he's not likely to get, or at least right now, I would sort of slide to the side of the ledger that suggests that there are problems, is this proposal for a 10-year tax credit for new manufacturing businesses and new manufacturing jobs. And you know, that bill had a hearing yesterday, and the vice chair of Ways and Means declared the bill not ready for prime time.
Really?
And said that it needed a lot of work and that they were not there to rewrite the bill for the administration. And I'll tell you, there was at least one Republican on the committee from Western Maryland who told the administration that they were disappointed in the bill because it was sold to them. This was the Jason Buckle from Allegheny County was a delegate who, you know, apparently rushed to co-sponsor the governor's bill because it was sold to him as a bill that would be targeted to helping rural areas, Western Maryland, Eastern Shore, and Baltimore City, who have high unemployment and high poverty rates. And when you look at the bill and you read it, it really allows for these manufacturing zones to be located in every jurisdiction in Maryland, something that the administration readily acknowledges. And, you know, and Buckle suggested that he felt like he was sold a bill of goods.
So I'm finding this kind of session very interesting. Maybe this is unfair, and you guys can probably disagree here with me, but what it might not accomplish.
Let me shift gears. I'm going to get to that. But, you know, yesterday we had a number of bills regarding police accountability.
Right.
And the administration has not really weighed in on it. It's kind of allowed the police departments to kind of, if this is your fight, you fight it. So I don't want to suggest that the governor is picking his fights, but he's kind of picking the things that he kind of wants to fight for. And Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, has the administration testified on behalf of any bill other than the budget committee?
They have in fact testified on bills. In fact, Mike Gill was testifying yesterday on behalf of the manufacturing tax credit bill. David Brinkley had another bill in front of Ways and Means. I mean, they have done that. And I will disagree with you a little bit on your characterization of yesterday's testimony regarding some of the police bills, because they did, you know, three of the governor's agencies did submit some response to some of the bills. And so, you know, while I think you can argue that the governor was not sitting there at the table talking about this, I mean, when you have agencies that are submitting testimony on bills, the administration is weighing in. But by and large, I think my sense is that by and large, Charles is right. They're picking and choosing their battles.
Well, on the issue of police accountability, in the time we have left, I'm just curious, because I have not followed what the governor was saying. I've been looking for it. So what is the governor's office position on this, on the issues around police accountability that are kind of front and center in the legislature?
Well, I think Charles is right, Mark, that the governor personally has not taken a position on this, but some of his agencies have sent letters expressing some thoughts about it. And to be honest with you, while we're talking, I'm trying to find my notes on it because it's a little more complicated than just sort of saying that they specifically support or oppose. But
right, and I think the bigger question was, you know, the working committee that put together the 22 or 21 proposals that were submitted as an omnibus bill yesterday. You know, it's going to get tweaked. There were both Democrats and Republicans who questioned some of the proposals about, you know, who makes up the review boards for when there's police misconduct. And that's the process that we go through down here. The other thing is that, look, there's certain fights you just don't want to get involved in. And I think, this police reform thing, I don't want to say it's not a fight that they want to get in. Brian's correct that there were a lot of police chiefs down here yesterday. There were members of the FOP down here, and they're all scrutinizing it. And they don't want to, you know, get caught with their, you know, being on the wrong side of whatever process comes out of here.
Well, I'm looking forward to having these continuing conversations with the two of you, because you're on top of this, and I'm learning a lot just listening to our listeners are as well. And I just, not to ask you both to be prescient as we close this segment out, but I'm just curious where you think this session will end up around things like police accountability and the question of taxes. I mean, how do you see this play between the governor's office and the legislature beyond that affecting this? And where do you think when do you think it will come out, Brian?
Let me tell you, Mark, if I had the ability to answer that question with any specificity, not only would I not be doing this radio show, but I would be going and betting all of my mortgage money in Vegas and then buying an island in the Bahamas.
I'm right behind you. Right.
You would never hear from me. I mean, look, this session, you know, everything is subject to change. The governor has certainly learned some lessons from last year in terms of the levers of power that he has to use, and he's clearly, you know, using some of those in terms of budgetary authority to try and move along some of his agenda. I think Charles is right. He's not going to get a lot of this. We're not going to see, for example, I think it's a long shot that we're going to see personal income tax reduction, although the House, the Senate, and the governor have been talking about it and have indicated a willingness to have a discussion about it. Some of these police accountability measures are going to get severely changed. I mean, I have a hard time believing that ultimately any bill that comes out on the other end is going to allow law enforcement officers to have input on two of the three people on a board that would sit in judgment of them. So I think a lot of this is going to get changed, but the idea that standing here almost 45 days before the end of the session that we know with any certainty what all of this is going to look like, I don't think I could reasonably do that for you.
That's fine.
I'm going to say ditto, but I'm going to add a couple of little caveats. Look, at the end of this session, we will have a budget. I don't think we'll go down to the midnight hour like we have in some sessions to get one. And at the end of that process, the governor has started to flex his muscles. Think about this. He's now appointing people that he wants to both boards and to various commissions, which means that whatever the Democratic agenda was is changing. Some people are not going to like it, and some people will go, well, this is the way government should work. And, you know, and it will remain to be seen whether or not the governor has a great session or a good session.
Gentlemen, it's always great to talk to you all. Thank you so much. Brian Sears is government reporter for The Daily Record. Charles Robinson is political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television. Appreciate you both taking time with us today.
Thank you, sir.
Have fun in Annapolis. On our way to break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org, or at SteinerShow.org is Maryland State Education Association's banner. And we will be talking about education, Baltimore City education, in the next hour. Stay with us and come right back.